Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting live from Judea to the world. You're a part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome to all of you. Shalom and welcome to the Land of Israel Network. Today we have a very, very special show, a very different show. Today's show is going to be three rabbis and a wife. Three rabbis and a wife. We're going to hear from Rabbi Stephen Przanski, the great writer, thinker, rabbi, lawyer from Congregation Bnei Yeshurun in Teaneck. We're going to hear about his thoughts about American Jewry and about AIPAC. We'll talk with Rabbi Yoshua Fass, who is going to be at the Aliyah Mega event in New York City. We're going to get his perspective on why he organized this massive thing to bring people an easier way to make Aliyah from New York and from America to the Land of Israel. Then we'll talk with Rabbi Gotch, that's his nickname, Rabbi Gotch Yudin, with his new yeshiva, Ashreinu, which is for a different kind of kid who needs a different kind of experience in the Land of Israel. And then we'll be joined by the co-hostess with the mostest, Malka Fleischer. She's going to knock out the show. We're going to talk about, that's three rabbis, bases loaded. Malka is going to grand slam it with a discussion about Pesach, getting ready for Pesach, and the Trump phenomenon. We're going to discuss it and we're going to laugh about it as well. But it's going to be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for an amazing show, and here we go with Rabbi Stephen Przanski from Teaneck. All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting from Teaneck to the world, and you're part of it wherever you are. Shalom and welcome. Yes, I'm on a trip to the United States, and I'm here in snowy Teaneck. I had to stay in Washington, wait out the storm, and I came here to New York City and then to Teaneck, and indeed there's snow on the ground, and it gave me that feeling that I actually needed this year because there was no snow in Eretz Yisrael, so I got to see the snow, and I feel like I actually did winter as it's supposed to be done. I'm sitting here with Rabbi Stephen Przanski, very famous rabbi. He's the spiritual leader of Congregation Bnei Yeshurun. It's a shul that has about 600 families, but when you get there, it feels like even more here in Teaneck, New Jersey. It's considered one of the most vibrant centers of Orthodox Judaism today in the United States, and I've seen that myself. There are other big shuls right around here in walking distance. He's also senior rabbi, senior rabbinical fellow at the Coalition for Jewish Values, which I've learned about recently. Very interesting organization that puts out statements about what Jewish values really are when it comes to news items, what Judaism thinks about abortion or guns or issues that challenge American life today. Rabbi Przanski graduated from Columbia and also from my alma mater, Benjamin Cardozo School of Law. He was a lawyer for 13 years until he became a rabbi. And he assumed his current pulpit. He is a member of the New York and federal bars and is admitted to practice before the United States Supreme Court. Not a small thing. He's also the author of several books, including Jewish Ethics of Personal Responsibility, Prophet for Today, Contemporary Lessons of the Book of Yoshua, and Judges for Our Time, Contemporary Lessons from the Book of Shoftim. He also gives a great history class, which I listen to, which you can find at YU Torah. And he writes,
RabbiPrzanski.com.
RabbiPrzanski.com, that's right. And I was going to get to it right now by saying that you're really one of the ways that people know what you're up to, what you're thinking, is your weekly blog, which just basically when you speak to a person and you mention your name, Rabbi Przanski, they'll say, sure, I read his blog. And that's at RabbiPrzanski.com, P-R-U. That was a little tricky for me living in Israel for too long. I didn't know how to spell that originally. This is Przanski. Rabbi, I'm here. First thing, I saw you this week, not in just in shul, but I also saw you on Monday, last Monday, in Washington, D.C. You were one of the guests at the Judea and Samaria event that was concurrent with AIPAC. It was also sponsored by the Ministry of Strategic Affairs. And there you were. And you got to see Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked and the other cabinet ministers and important people, Shmuley Boteach, another rabbi, and others that spoke at the event. And this event raised not a little bit of interest in the media because it looked like the settlers, quote-unquote, the folks in the West Bank, quote-unquote, made a splash at AIPAC, while at the same time AIPAC, seemingly the head of AIPAC, Howard Kaur, spoke about his determination that we continue forward with the two-state solution. And those seem to be running on parallel and maybe parallel tracks, maybe actually tracks that head-on collision tracks. And I wanted to get your impressions as a person who is really, in a sense, AIPAC is appealing to you. You're an American Jew.
a Zionist American Jew. At the same time, you identify, I think, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I think you identify with the folks living in Judea and Samaria, the rights of Jews to live in Judea and Samaria. So what did you think of that whole AIPAC, our presence at AIPAC, and AIPAC's continued support for the two-state solution?
Yishai, thank you for coming. Thank you for having me on. I'm a supporter of AIPAC. I've been a supporter for many years, and I think they do a wonderful job in representing the interests of the Jewish people in the State of Israel, serving sometimes as an intermediary between the Israeli government and the American government, but also they're a voice of the people. And they're able to attract a lot of support for Israel from across the board. So nothing I say should be perceived as a harsh criticism. I think I'm pointing out the obvious, though. When I attended this week, I got the feeling that they are in a bit of a time warp in the sense that the policies that they are proposing and advocating for are essentially matters that they would advocate for last year and they'll be back next year. So the three main issues they dealt with were aid to Israel and BDS and Iran. And that was last year and 2 years ago and 3 years ago, and it'll be next year and 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So they're very effective in doing that. And I think in educating and illuminating the Congress about these issues, but in some way they are trapped in a dynamic that is no longer relevant. The two-state, I call it the two-state illusion. The two-state illusion is essentially moot. It's moot from the perspective of the Israeli government, even the prime minister. It was I saw this week in Be'sheva, I saw it yesterday, in fact, in a meeting with the New York Times and the Washington Post, walked away from it. He didn't renounce his Bar-Ilan speech, but he just said it's not going to happen now. It's not happening. Not now, not for the foreseeable future. And certainly the Trump administration, which of course is very, very friendly to Israel, has said, I mean, Trump said a number of times he doesn't support it. If the Israelis want it, they'll do it. So the phrase that the American government now uses, that if the two-state solution, if it's supported by both sides. Well, if the Israelis don't support it, it means the Americans don't support it. So we have to then ask ourselves, why is it that AIPAC continues to advocate for a proposal that is no longer extant, and one that just based on recent history shows absolutely no possibility of ever bringing peace or anything resembling peace. So why would they continue to do that? I think it was Yuval Steinitz who said at the supplementary conference of the Yesha Council that if someone says to him two-state illusion, then he just says to them, well, we tried the land for peace in Gaza, and that didn't work. So maybe once you straighten out Gaza, we can talk about Yehudah Shomron. But don't even mention it while Gaza is still the chaotic place that it is. So it's troubling that they continue to go down these lines when, in fact, it's unnecessary. It's unnecessary because two core bases of support that AIPAC has, now the religious Jewish community, which is much more prominent at AIPAC than it was certainly 10, 15, 20 years ago, and the Christian evangelical community. Both those community, if not entirely, at least in substantial part, are completely opposed to the two-state illusion and for those most valid reasons. So why AIPAC would continue to proffer that front and center at their policy conferences means that they need, on some level, to reevaluate the policies that they're discussing at these conferences to conform it more to the present reality.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about diversity. There's a lot of talk about open tent. And yet we folks living in Judea and Samaria feel like in Israeli politics, we certainly have representation. In fact, we make up the government, right? A lot of times when I'm speaking to folks on the other side, they strike a very haughty pose as though my opinions are, you know, less than theirs. And I remind them, I'm like, you do recognize the fact that we have 67 seats in parliament of mostly people who believe what we believe. remember that we have schools, parties, the populace is with us, and give me the credit at least for being what we are, which is a ruling party, which is a ruling, you know, ideology. At AIPAC, it seems like that ideology doesn't even exist. I'm not even talking about adopting that position, but at least airing out that policy perspective.
At least entertain it. You have dozens of breakout sessions that AIPAC has, and they're fascinating. Why can't there be at least one breakout sessions on alternatives to the two-state illusion, on what's happening in Yudan Shomron? You have hundreds of thousands of people living there. It would be appropriate if AIPAC, when they took congressmen to Israel, took them not just to Gush Etzion, all right, but take them to Beit El, take them to Otniel. Let them see what's really happening, how Jews are living, how Jews are thriving in the land of our forefathers, the land that God promised to the Jewish people, because those are the facts on the ground. That's the reality. But when you become trapped in an ideology for political and philosophical reasons, then you have blinders on. And you have blinders on, it colors the way you're going to interact with the congressman as well. I was just reading again in Besheva today, someone was writing, they interviewed a congressman, one of the reporters, and they had no idea that Jews are living in the vicinity. One, you know, they have to make the pilgrimage to the Mukata in Ramallah. And one said, well, you know, Jews live right nearby, Psagot. He said, really? Why wouldn't we stop there? Stop in the winery, all right? See what Jews are doing there. It's literally across the street. But it's not that they don't visit there. These congressmen had no idea that there are Jewish settlements living in the vicinity.
But
that
there are,
is a tremendous error they're making.
But there are many congressmen who do. And I want to tell you that I spent the next 2 days after AIPAC lobbying in Congress and met with a lot of congressmen. I met with Congressman DeSantis. I met with Congressman, who else?
I saw a few weeks ago you had a few congressmen that Tzipi Chotovelli brought.
Yes.
To Shiloh, et cetera.
And there was a congressman who came from West Virginia to Hebron, and the two congressmen who got arrested on the Temple Mount.
Right, right.
You know,
my point is that I think AIPAC would be in a better place if they, like you said, expanded the tent and made everyone realize that that's also part of Israel. Part of Israel, that's the policy of the government of Israel.
Right.
And if they're not going to advocate the policies of the government of Israel, what exactly are they trying to do? Now, again, there are sensitivities involved, maybe not for me or you, but for them, because they're still trying to reach out to the progressive base so they don't become affiliated with J Street, which is completely anti-Israel, no matter what they say about themselves. So they're trying to keep these people in the tent, and one way to do that is to advocate for these so-called solutions that have always sounded good, but have never worked in theory. So they're trying to keep them in the fold in that sense, but you really can't keep people in the fold by selling them a bill of goods. It's not going to work. Talk to them. I mean, I'll tell you something else, a little disconcerting to me, that in all the sessions, I think the only person who quoted a pasuk from the Torah was Mike Pence. And he finished his peroration with a quote he quoted in English, of course, but a pasuk he quoted, Im yenidach b'tzeh shemayim, God says to us, if you're scattered to the ends of the earth, I'll take you from there and I'll bring you back to the land of your forefathers. That's what Mike Pence quoted. Why can't a Jew quote that? It's our Torah. So that's a problem they have to deal with. There is growing, and it's to be in the very near future, the most active and probably dominant part of the American Jewish community, the Orthodox voice.
Rabbi, you know, when you were a kid, Orthodoxy was in retreat.
Well, how old do you think I am? What are you talking about?
Okay.
I know.
In the old days, but not so long ago. Not so long ago. The Reformed Conservative world was the leader of American Jewry. They had big temples with lots of congregants, and there was a vibrant sense to their life and future. And that was Judaism. And Orthodox Judaism was on the run. I'll never forget that there's a, on YouTube, you can find that Larry King interviews Rav Kahana, and he says, Rabbi Meir Kahani is an Orthodox rabbi, maybe one of the last.
Really?
Yes, I saw it myself. And, you know, an incredible thing. And now today it is obvious that the tables have turned very, very much, that the Reform conservative world does not have an internal vibrancy, and that it's slipping. In terms of membership, you could just go there on Friday night. In terms of the power, in terms of the political power, while
numbers and enthusiasm is a tremendous decline.
Right, and exactly to match that is the upswing of Orthodox Judaism here in the United States, of the various varieties, including what they call right wing here, which means something different than it does in Israel. It means ultra Orthodox black hat folks. But I don't want to talk about them so much. I actually want to talk about Teaneck. You know, Teaneck, Englewood, Bergenfield. What an obviously dynamic feeling there is here. And me, you know, I'm a Zionist of the variety that wants to build Eretz Yisrael. So when I used to come to a place like this, I used to feel like a little. It would be stressful for me because I'd be like, well, we're trying to build Eretz Yisrael. What's going on here? Thank God I've grown out of that, actually, and I've come to understand that we're holding hands across the Atlantic. And you come into your shul, immediately you're met with tons of pictures of Jerusalem, of Eretz Yisrael. You have a picture of Yerushalayim, and then it says there's like a little sign underneath this that says Center of the Universe. Your congregants come often to Eretz Yisrael, support Eretz Yisrael. Just listening to people in the coat room, they're talking about Pesach, who's going to Eretz Yisrael or not. And very, very tellingly, many of their children are either spending time in Eretz Yisrael, in the army, at yeshiva, university.
I have two children living in Israel.
Right.
And eight grandchildren. Yeah.
There you go. So today I really see it very differently. But I want you to comment, really, I don't even know what your answer is. I want you to comment a little bit about this visible success of this community financially. Also, there was great Torah I heard over this Shabbat. Like, where is it all? What's the direction and what's the relationship between Israel and places like this?
Well, take it back a step. You know, you referred to a different type of a Jewish community when we were young, right, where the Orthodox were not as prominent and Reform Conservative were considered, the top of the chart. And what's changed today, of course, is not just the resurgence of Orthodoxy, but actually most Jews identify as unaffiliated. They're not Reform or Conservative or Orthodox. They're unaffiliated, which is a problem. But what we see is the growth of both, let's say extremes, but both sides of the map, meaning there is a tremendous proliferation and burgeoning of the Torah community on the one hand, and then a tremendous disappearance and assimilation on the other hand, large numbers. So you have those two extremes. To me, it always evokes the Talmudic statement in Sanhedrin that the generation which Mashiach comes will either be kulo chayav or kulo zakai, meaning totally guiltless or totally meritorious. I mean, guilty or meritorious. So we're heading in those two directions.
You can't have both.
Yeah, you're heading in those two directions because you have, you know, kulo zakai and you have kulo chayav. But what's interesting is that this parallels a similar dynamic in Israel that you're aware of also. Rabbi Wein always tells a story that when Ben-Gurion, now 70 years ago, entered into the status quo agreement with the religious parties, what included Aguda back then, the religious parties, and the status quo agreement established that there'd be kashrut and shmirat Shabbat in all official government institutions. And he was attacked by the Mapam, which was far left to the Mapai. He was attacked. You don't believe in any of this. This is not what we want. We wanted a socialist, basically atheistic state. How could you agree to this? And Ben-Gurion said to the head of the Mapam, O Dor Achad, give them one more generation, then they're going to disappear. All right? Like you said in your introduction to the question, one generation and it's gone. Well, he was wrong. He was right about a lot of things, but he was wrong about this. So the proliferation of Torah and the growth of Torah communities in Israel, both the Dati Lumi, the religious Zionist community, and the Chardali and the Haredi community, I mean, you're talking millions of Jews. And so the entire complexion of the state has changed. And you see a similar process unfolding in Teaneck, for example, as well, but other communities.
But we don't have, in Israel, while we have cultural assimilation, most Jews that are out of identification as Torah Jews, et cetera, still marrying Jewish. That's not a situation that you have here in America with true assimilation.
In America, it's a catastrophe. I mean, outside the Orthodox community, the assimilation rate is over 70%. That means, and your listeners should be aware of this, most marriages outside the Orthodox community are in fact intermarriages. And that's a disaster for the Jewish people. And that's why you find so often that you're going to have voices saying, we have to have outreach to the intermarried. There was an article in one of these papers, maybe the Forward, some other article a few months ago, saying we should no longer look upon intermarriage as a disaster, but as a natural part of Jewish life, and they're no different. That's why you have to have patrilineal descent, you have to broaden the definition of Jews. It's as if all there is to Judaism is an ethnic identity. And if you have some Jewish blood in you, you're part of the tribe. But Judaism is more than an ethnic identity. It is a religious identity as well. And strip away the religious identity, and all you have is the ethnic identity, then you have no reason to continue to being Jews, no reason, in fact, to fight for the survival of Torah. There's no need for it. Eat kreplach, and that's it, or gefilte fish. That's all you have to do. A lot of Jews feel that way, and they're the ones who are disappearing.
Okay, so what if I'm looking at American Jewry 50 years from now, what am I going to be able to see? How's it going to look?
I have no idea. But I would say that if you just go by current trends, the modern Orthodox community is diminishing in number. Right now, the estimate is that in the Orthodox world, about 70% are yeshiva Haredi. They happen to have more children than the modern Orthodox have. And the modern Orthodox is about 30%. Mm-hmm. Okay? Consider that Aliyah of American Jews is mostly from the modern Orthodox, right, not from the Haredi Yeshivish. So therefore, you're taking a dedicated cadre out of the American Jewish community and sending them to Israel, like my own children, for example. So that's also part of the decline in numbers. But add to that also the fact that we're not concentrated. You know, there are modern Orthodox bastions that exist, maybe a dozen across the country, but they're growing in their own sense, but they're not expanding, all right? So Teaneck is Teaneck, and of course Teaneck includes Bergenfield now, New Milford, etc. But it's not as if you have 30 families who are going to Wayne, all right, or to Nutley, or other areas. No, Teaneck now has the infrastructure, and it exists, and it's thriving, but it's changing. It's changing because many of our children make Aliyah. Unfortunately, Rahman al-Assad, we do lose a certain percentage as well, who simply abandon the Torah. Some become more yeshivish also. And as a result, the numbers are in somewhat decline. It's not to say the Teaneck community is in decline, but generally the numbers of so-called modern Orthodox or centrist Orthodox Jews are in decline. If you think about it, there's one, maybe two, what we call modern Orthodox institutions. There's Yeshiva University, and maybe there's Torah College. But in the Haredi world, you have dozens of yeshivas, large ones, that are attracting thousands of Talmidim, all right? I mean, Lakewood is more Talmidim than YU has. So if you just extrapolate from there that they are going to have more children, then you see why there's exponential growth in the Haredi world. So I think you're looking at American Jewry 50 years from now that, I mean, I'm not the first to say this, it'll be predominantly Haredi or unaffiliated. And the unaffiliated, of course, will have such a tenuous connection to the Jewish people that it will be Haredi dominated. Now, on one hand, it's a problem because we'll lose a lot of Jews. On the other hand, from a perspective of Torah, you have to have Haredi Jews, like in Israel, where the numbers are growing as well, take a greater, more active, more participatory role in the management of national affairs. meaning you can't just isolate yourself from the community if you're a third of the population or half the population. You have to get involved and make a contributions from a national perspective, not only from a spiritual perspective.
But that's not their ideology. Like, it's hard for me to see AIPAC filled with Haredi Jews. Even at AIPAC this year in D.C., where I saw, we went to Minyan to pray and at the makeshift synagogue out of a big ballroom. There was 1,000 people there. It was a massive gathering of people, but very few people that you would reflexively guess are called ultra-Orthodox.
Right. That's because the Haredi community in America, by and large, are not Zionists. Now, we could explore, we need at least a few hours to talk about it. Why is it they're no longer Zionists? Maybe it made sense 100 years ago. Maybe it made less sense 70 years ago. But it no longer makes any sense. And to be hung up on the issue of whether the state of Israel is Adchalta de Geula or not, the beginning of the redemption, or the beginning of the flowering of redemption, it's like you're arguing how many angels are dancing on the head of a pin. The fact is, you have 7 million Jews now almost living in Israel, all right? It's the thriving center of Jewish life. It is the Torah center in the world. Even the Haredim recognize that. So therefore, whatever negativity you might have had in the past, born out of certain opposition that existed amongst Hungarian Jewry and some Lithuanian Rabbanim, etc., that by now should be moot. It's a different circumstance. My point with that, I hope I don't offend too many of your listeners, but because the Chazon Ish opposed something politically in the early 1950s, it does not mean that people today, almost 70 years later, should oppose the same thing. Everything has changed. Then, Orthodoxy, the Torah world, was in a minority trying to fight for survival. Now it's almost the majority. And in so many different areas of society, so many different realms of activity, the Orthodox are dominant. Their views are sought out. And therefore, they have to take a more leading role. They can't fight from the sidelines just in a sectoral way. They have to try to act in a much more Klal Yisrael way. And I think over time that will happen. Look, Haredi world, more Haredi men are working than ever before in Israel. More are in the army than ever before. Haredi women are joining the workforce in greater numbers as well. And is Torah suffering? No, I don't think Torah is suffering. If anything, Torah will burgeon even more as a result of people's interactions. And I think even in terms of the general society, the average Israeli, that's even the secular Israeli, who sees Haredi people in the workplace, and the normal people, they're just from, they're moral, they're proper, they keep their distance from women, they're not involved in all these other things that are roiling the world now, but they're decent, moral people. That can only make them look up, like the Gemara says in Yoma, Daf Pei Vav Amud Aleph, look at this Jew. What a wonderful person he is. The father who taught him Torah, the Rebbe who taught him Torah, what a wondrous thing. I want some of that myself. Vahafta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol avavcha. What does it mean? Sheyehei shem shamayim mitahev al yadcha. That God's name should be beloved through you. So when we're in the workplace and people perceive they were honest, moral, decent, interesting people, who can interact with everybody, who have something to talk about with everyone, a lot of people more and more will say, you know what, I want that for myself also. I want that for my children, because they'll be grounded not only in morals and values, but their Jewish identity will take root in a way that it cannot be erased.
I see you're very passionate about this issue.
I've thought about it a lot, yeah. That's why, because yeah. I live it. Not only live it here, I live in Israel also. You see, you want an integrated community, and the more that happens, people think there's a danger to Torah, and on some level there is. There's always a danger to Torah, but it depends what's inside. On the other hand, I think is a greater opportunity for Torah than there is a danger, and we have to seize that opportunity.
I want to just say something that you said a little bit differently, which is that 70 years ago and 100 years ago, there was something called the Jewish question. There was a nomadic type people, not nomadic, but dispersed people amongst different societies. They somehow annoyed societies for various reasons. maybe religious reasons and other reasons. And there was this thing called the Jewish question. That's literally what it was called. They asked, what are we going to do with these people? That question has been solved. There is no Jewish question today. We know that Eretz Yisrael is the capital of the Jewish people, and there are satellites, hopefully strong satellites, in the meantime, in any case. But in any case, they have a home. Those satellites are strong because they know that if something happens in Teaneck, if there's an earthquake in Teaneck, they know that there's a home in Jerusalem. And that issue has gone away. Personally, and we're not going to get into this now, I personally think there is a new question on the horizon, which is the Arab question. Like, where are the Arab peoples going? Where do they want to go? What do they want to do with themselves? Right now, they are devolving and just in a hate-filled kind of mindset, which is eating themselves up, not to mention trying to destroy others. That's what the question is in my mind right now, vis-a-vis our future, because it's like, what are we going to do with these folks, these millions of people? This is the Arab question, but there is no more Jewish question. I think that goes to the point that you were making, that the old fight about, is Zionism right? Is it going to be a big secular thing? Is it going to, you know, get rid of Torah? That's all. That fight's been done. That arm wrestle has been finished off.
Right. There's one other issue, and that is you go back to the early Zionists, like Herzl, for example, who, and even some of his successors, who posited that if there would be a Jewish state, you'd have an end to Jew hatred in the world. All right. Boy, was he wrong about that. The fact is, what Israel has done is essentially concentrated Jew hatred on one place and the people who live there. So obviously, Jew hatred comes from another source. It comes, like our sages said, from Sinai. The fact that we have a Torah given to us by God at Sinai made us into a unique and chosen people to propagate God's morality to the world. That is, in essence, the source of all Jew hatred in the world. So in fact, the more Jews develop Israel, the more I pray and hope and can see a situation whereby Jew hatred starts to recede as people see the contributions that Jews make to the world. And I think, by the way, that's part of what AIPAC does and does well, is that they present to a general public Israel's scientific achievements, its technological prowess, things that benefit all of humanity, and not even to mention the rescue teams Israel sends out across the globe. All those things enlighten the world as to what Jews concentrated in this small state at the crossroads of civilization, battered by so many enemies, are nonetheless able to accomplish with the grace of God.
Absolutely. That is something that they do very, very well. However, with the issue that Israel is being accused of, which is occupation, that they kind of sweep under the rug. They don't want to deal with that, but that is the claim. And I gave a speech at Limud in London, the big one, the English, the one in England. And I started my talk with, this is the most important session at this whole big convention. And why is that? I held up a newspaper that showed the vote of 2334, Security Council Resolution 2334. I said, this is on the front page of all the newspapers. It's not because I'm so smart that this session's so important. It's because this is the issue, and everybody else just wants to sweep it under the rug. They're accusing us of stealing somebody else's land. If we don't answer that, no amount of high-tech and water technology will eviscerate that question, which is, have we stolen somebody else's land? Listen, Rabbi...
That's absolutely correct. But the fact is, we have to understand that in every generation, there's one mitzvah that becomes difficult to do, and you're able, I think Rav Kook's Talmud Chaver of Charlap said this, that mitzvah is the mitzvah the nations of the world attack, all right? And the mitzvah today that the nations of the world attack is the settlement of the land of Israel. And I've heard Naftali Bennett say many times, you can't occupy your own land. We're in the land. We've always been in the land. The land was given to us. We've never severed our connection to the land. We've just returned to parts of it we haven't lived in for a few centuries. So therefore, we have to undo that entire mindset. And I think it'll happen. I think AIPAC has a role to play in that as well, simply divesting the world of the notion that somehow there is another people, another nation that has a claim to that land. It's not true. You see, what the president did in declaring Jerusalem the capital of Israel is a clarifying moment, all right? And he doesn't always clarify things, but when he does it very forcefully. And now the Palestinians, they like many Americans as well, I've never had to deal with such a force. A president who actually follows through his campaign promises And all the experts tell him, you can't do this, you can't do that. And he does it because he just thinks, well, why not? It's there. Everyone knows it's there. Why can't we just tell the truth? Well, you tell the truth, good things happen.
Rabbi Stephen Przanski, you tell the truth a lot. You do it also very regularly. People hear you in shul. People hear your classes. I want to recommend that people check out your website, Rabbi Przanski, also for great history lessons. You're right now giving a series on 20th century rabbis, including the Lubavitch Rebbe. Recently, you gave a big one. And of course, I was going to ask you a question, but we won't have enough time, about Rav Soloveitchik, whose 25th anniversary of passing is around now, and also your weekly blog dealing with issues, and that's what's so fun about you, Rabbi Przanski, is that you really tackle the issues. Recently, a different rabbi sent me an email, like a mass email, and basically he was like, well, these issues are complex, and there's a lot of complexities, and it's hard, and therefore we have to balance, and it was like, you have said nothing, and I immediately signed off from getting his emails. You say something that has also, of course, gotten you sometimes into controversial moments.
Who, me?
Yeah. but you've never shied away from that. And I want to thank you so much for letting me into your home and letting me into your community. And thank you so much for keeping this community connected to the land of Israel.
Thank you very much. And to your listeners as well, keep up your support and love of Israel.
All right, folks, Yishai Fleischer here, and I'm in New York City. You know, it's one of my favorite cities in the world, and I'm amazed sometimes that I left it to go to Eretz Yisrael because it's got such a pull. It's so exciting. It's so fun. And yet, hey, folks, you know, while New York City is so great, we have a country that we're building. We have a country that we've prayed for and dreamed of for 2,000 years, and our opportunity is now. But what's going to help people get out of that glue of New York City, of Teaneck where I was, of Brooklyn? What's going to help them kind of like snap out of it and head out to the land of Israel? Well, there are a few great people in this world who have dedicated their whole life to making it more possible for you to make Aliyah, to come to the land of Israel. And of course, one of my personal heroes, a great rabbi himself, very successful rabbi in America, but changed his whole life in order to make you have an easier time to come to the land of Israel, Rabbi Yehoshua Fass. He's the co-founder and executive director of Nefesh B'Nefesh, the organization dedicated to making Aliyah easier. And we're here at a beautiful mega event. Rabbi Yehoshua Fass, we're at a mega event right now that you're running, that Nefesh B'Nefesh is running. It's got a fair, it's got cafes, it's got communities that are showing everybody what they have to offer, where they could live in Efrat, where I live, or Beit Shemesh, or anywhere else. And you also have licensing for doctors. Many things are happening at the same time. Tell me about this New York City mega event.
It's like an Aliyah amusement park. Basically, everything is under one roof. We want to have a few different locations throughout America that anyone who's interested in any stage of their Aliyah could come here today. And either if you want to make Aliyah in 6 months or a year from now and you need all the technicalities lined up, it's a place for you. If you're thinking about it, you're sitting on the fence and you need some Aliyah confidence and a boost of some kind of inspiration, it's also the place. And we also have a bunch of families that came here that have no interest in making Aliyah, but they know that they should have an interest in making Aliyah, and they're just walking around getting the whole atmospherics of the day, seeing the doctors being licensed, seeing the families find their homes, looking at people line up for shipping and accounting. It's pretty awesome. Just awesome is just the diversity of the age, and also just the different types of people here, and just really high caliber people who are interested in moving to Israel.
Right. So you said a word right now, which is shipping, right? Just the thought right there, like, you want to move to Israel, you need a shipper, right? So right here, you're going to meet Kef International and Ilan Cervetio, I forgot his name, he's what who I used. There's all these organizations here. That's what Nefesh B'Nefesh specializes in. It actually is the mechanics also of Aliyah. Another thing that you just took me to, you said, Isha, if you didn't see this, you didn't see what this mega event is about. You took me to a doctor's room. I thought it was going to be all white and machines, but no, it is actually doctors meeting with hospitals, meetings that you already prearranged, specialists that these hospitals need, licensing happening in the same room. This is a lot of the nuts and bolts, and this is what Nefesh B'Nefesh was always so good at and really has revolutionized, which is the nuts and bolts of making it better and easier to come home.
Yeah, it's constantly connecting more dots for our clients. The more years that we're in existence, the more influence that we have and the more experience that we have, and taking a more macro viewpoint of what Aliyah is to make sure that we line up all the different points to make it successful for these olim and to make it easier for them.
Give me an example, though. I want tachlis. Give me a nuts and bolts thing.
I'll give you one here in Israel, and one here in America, and one here in Israel. In Israel, a bunch of lone soldiers have, when a lone soldier has a day off from the army, they have to basically find their way out of the base, line up for hours at the bank to get their paperwork done, and by the time they have to get back to the base, they really didn't do anything. So we, with our muscle and with our 15 years of influence, we arranged with the IDF that there will be one day called Yom Sidurim for the Chayalim, and close to 2,000 soldiers, lone soldiers, come to one house, one roof. It's like the mega post-Aliyah for lone soldiers, if you want to look at parallels. And we bring optometrists, and we bring the transportation licensing, and we even have the driver testing. So you have lone soldiers from around the world coming in with their valid license from their European country or American country, and 3 hours later they walk out with a license after taking a driver test. This is the influence that we can possibly have because of the years of experience. Now, do it in pre-Aliyah. You have a doctor who used to... person had to make Aliyah, wait a year until they're licensed after doing their internship, and then only a year later could they possibly find a job. So we've influenced and moved all that up so that a person can get their licensing already here, can already connect to an employer, and hit the ground running, and only and minimize the risk of saying goodbye to your practice, saying goodbye to your home, because it's not such a leap of faith when you've lined certain things up. And basically, all we're trying to do constantly is minimize that leap of faith. There are heroes. They're amazing. They're a minority of individuals who get it, who understand that this is a modern-day miracle, that get it, that understand that this is an opportunity that for thousands of years we've been dreaming of, as you said, Yishai, and we have this opportunity, and they're grabbing it. And each one of these individuals are gems, because they're a minority of a minority that get it, that understand it, that are passionate, that are sacrificing certain things to influence Israeli society, to hit the ground running, and also make a better path for their future, for their families. So every single one of these individuals, we have to make sure that they feel the receptivity and feel that they're being honored and feel that they're getting the services that they have, because they're gems, each one and every one of them.
Rabbi Fassa, I know that we're in the middle of mega events. This is my last question, and I got to let you go. There's Israeli Knesset members here. There's a lot of people. There's events, there are concurrent sessions for accountants, lawyers, doctors, etc. And you already alluded to this, but I still want to kind of sharpen this, which is, give me some kind of profile of the personality. I'm not asking now for just an emotional answer. I'm asking for a kind of technical answer. How is it that somebody, I was just in Teaneck for Shabbat. It's fabulous. I was in, you know, Manhattan and in Brooklyn. These places are, they're attractive. There's wealth. There's a job. There's opportunity. Give me a profile of a person. There used to be a kind of profile of a person who made Aliyah who was, for, you know, quote unquote, you know, not successful here in America and needed a way out. It's clear to me that that is not the clientele that is coming to make Aliyah here. Tell me about what is the psychology or the profile or the kind of person that wants to, is willing to give it up and come to the land of Israel, to the Middle East.
I think it's substance. You talk to each of these families, not saying that others are not, but there's a tremendous undercurrent of a substantive life. Mm-hmm. They really want to live a life of meaning. They understand and they prioritize their lives in a very inspirational way of understanding what they want for themselves, what they want for their children and grandchildren. And it's very much removing themselves from certain comforts and certain ways of living to go for substance versus for gold or glimmer. You know, when I was little, we had those games, the pegs and the squares, and you would have to put the square in the right square and the circle in the right circle. So I think a lot of diaspora Jewry shoves in that square into that circle. It fits. Somehow it fits, and you can be somewhat comfortable. But there's a notion of just fitting in and making things as a smooth belonging. And I think a lot of the families here and the individuals here, they feel belonging. They feel like the peg is in the right place when they visit Israel, when they're in Israel. They feel a sense of connection, connectivity, belonging, and a sense of meaning.
And also maybe a building also, right?
Yeah, 100%. People, you hear a lot of the sentiments, especially in the Go Beyond Pavilion. The north, the south, we have tons of communities here that are pitching the north and south, the periphery of Israel. I hate using that terminology, to Olim, prospective Olim. And the amazing thing is that you have a lot of people interested in that because they view themselves as modern-day pioneers. Mm-hmm. They want to, the modern-day chalutz, they want to come and not just contribute professionally and also with their bodies, but they also want to develop certain areas in the country, and that's remarkable.
That is remarkable, and that's maybe in a world where it's kind of self-centered, the I generation, I like to call it. You know, this is a completely different and contra atmosphere. Again, I want you to know, here I am, New York City, and close by is Columbus Circle, tall buildings, big companies. You walk down here to John Jay Criminal College, and suddenly you see all these folks coming in, and you recognize their faces. You're like, wow, these are the people that can be my friends in the future. These are the people that are going to be influential in the future. They're coming to the land of Israel to build. It's an awesome feeling. I want to thank you, Rabbi Yehoshua Fast.
Thank you so much for stopping by. It's amazing to see you. And have a safe trip back to our Holy Land.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show, and I'm here with Rabbi Gotch Yudin. That's a nickname, Gotch, right? Great nickname, but that's the one that stuck. It's one of those nicknames that just sticks. And Rabbi Yudin is somebody that I grew up with. And today he's of course the son of the famous Rabbi Benjamin Yudin, who was my Masada Kedushin and the person who officiated my wedding, our wedding, and also somebody who taught my parents for many years. And today his son Gotch is the director, the Rosh Yeshiva, and the founder of a very special yeshiva here in Israel for boys, a boys yeshiva, boys one-year program after high school, a one-year program that many of, there are many kinds here in Israel. But this is a different one. This is a special one. He's here in Hebron today with his school and with his yeshiva. And I thought to myself, this is a great opportunity to speak with somebody who's heading up a kind of institution which is so necessary because it catches, I think, the kind of boys that could easily go on a different track in life. Rabbi Yudin, the name of your yeshiva is a special name itself, which is Ashreinu. Ashreinu means, what does that mean?
Ashreinu means how lucky we are. And we are. Yeshiva is very lucky to, it's our sixth year of our yeshiva. And Hashem gave me an epiphany around 7 years ago when I thought of this yeshiva. Our yeshiva is basically combined for mostly kids from the United States. We have now kids from England and from Australia and from France. But there are wonderful, wonderful young men. And many of them come from yeshiva day schools. So that's the concept of learning three siddurim a day, a full morning seder, a full afternoon seder, and a full night seder, doesn't necessarily speak to them. I mean, generally in yeshiva day schools today, boys learn two and girls learn 2-3 hours a day of Judaic studies with Mudei Kodesh. And, you know, for many of them to make a jump for your classic yeshiva where there are 9 to 11 hours of Torah study a day is, even if they're academically and they can do it, in their mindset, it's not really what they're looking for. And so it hit me a while ago that there are wonderful, wonderful guys out there that may either not be coming to Israel or not considering studying for a year in Israel because the concept of learning and sitting in a Beit Midrash in a classroom all day really, you know, wasn't speaking to them. So in my heart, there's three components to Ashreinu. And we say, Al Shosha Dvarim Alam Omei, the world rests on three things, Torah and the Torah study. And we definitely do a very lovely morning of Torah study, not necessarily focused only on Talmud. We boys get a chance to study Jewish philosophy and halacha, so on and so forth. But then 3 afternoons a week, we do all different types of volunteering, all different types of chesed, dealing with children with special needs, elderly, guys volunteer in ambulances, Magen David Adom, all different types of volunteering. And the third component, which is so important, if the boys are coming to Israel for the year, in my heart and mind, they got to make the land of Israel their classroom. You could study in a Beit Midrash anywhere in the world. But if you're coming to Israel for the year, and hopefully longer or more, you got to be able to, every mountain, everywhere we go, has another story. Every mountain has part of ancient history, is part of modern Jewish history. So every single Tuesday, we have the privilege, we take the boys all over Eretz Israel. And we get a chance for them to meet the people, to experience, to see, to understand exactly what is so unbelievably special about our land of Eretz Israel. So actually the name Ashreinu came about because there's a pasuk that says Ashreinu matov chalkenu. Every day we're privileged to say that during our Karbanot section. Ashreinu, how lucky we are for our Torah. Umanayim garaleinu, how good is my lot? Well, my lot's pretty good, but how do you know how good your lot is? You got to go out into society. And if you see other people doing good, great. But if they need help, you got to help them. That's chesed. And finally, umayafa yirushasenu, how beautiful is the land that yirushasenu, our Yerusha, according to many opinions, referring to this beautiful land of Israel. So in Ashreinu, we incorporate the concept of Torah study with helping others and to be able to connect and see this land, you know, on a regular, regular basis.
So I was with the group just now, and they ate lunch, and one of them had a little, like, speaker, and he started playing some, like, reggae-type or rap-type music, and You know, I just came. I'm still. I have spiritual jet lag. I'm still a little bit in Teaneck and in New York and in Washington, where I was for the last 9 days. And I got to see, you know, America. And it's always, you know, a little bit shocking because on the one hand, Rabbi Przanski talked about it on the show. Like, on the one hand, certain communities are getting stronger, and the community that you come from Fairlawn, also getting stronger. But he said, but overall, that's not true. It's not that the overall Jewish community is getting stronger. It's actually kind of shrinking or holding its own. But certain places have become more Mecca-ish, if I could borrow a term from Islam. But there's a lot of people that do get lost. And some of your boys here, not all, but some of your boys I could see would be the type of people that would take an exit out of Judaism, out of certainly an Israel connection, and they would be swallowed up by that culture, which is very attractive. How do you, you know, am I right in my assumption? And how do you steer them back into the fold? And how does the yeshiva Ashreinu, you know, do that as opposed to other yeshivot who don't really do that?
All right, so I think just also by definition, I think many of the students that we have in our yeshiva are from yeshiva day schools all across the country and coming from modern Orthodox day schools. And within any yeshiva day school experience or community, you definitely have kids that are coming from all different types of backgrounds. And definitely kids who are definitely, you know, a lot more connected to the culture you're describing, so on and so forth. And also we're blessed that there are, you know, within America, there are some wonderful organizations like NCSY who reach out to kids, let's say, who have gone to public school but have become a little bit more religious over their high school through NCSY or through these other type of organizations. And now it's time for them to come to Israel for their year. And again, the concept of them learning, if they don't necessarily have a very, you know, strong background in Judaic studies, for them to make the jump from a public school to a yeshiva, that's classically learning 9-10 hours a day, maybe a lot. But the fact that they can swallow, and we have, like, I'm very proud, we have close to 60 boys this year in our yeshiva. We have 8 different levels of rabbeim that are teaching these 60 boys, so around 7-8 boys to a class. And there are boys who are studying Gemara on a very, very high level because they've had success in their Judaic studies through high school, and they did connect to Judaism and Torah, and they were able to do that, and they could continue to challenge them on their level. But there are kids who have come, have never really opened up a Gemara in their life, have never saw. And we have the privilege, and thank God we've hired our staff in such a way that, you know, with the proper training, that boys who come from a varied, a variety of different backgrounds can learn under the same roof. But what's amazing is they can then get beleveled on the playing field. When it comes to chesed, you could have a kid who was academically really, really strong in high school. And we have kids who are really academically strong, but they were like big doers in high school. They were like involved in their GO. They were involved in chesed. They were involved in Tomchei Shabbat. So when they come to Israel, they want to be able to continue doing and active. So you could give who's very, very bright and just wants to help. And then at the same time, on a tool like you saw today, there are some kids, you know, who shine on these trips, whether they know their history, whether, you know, we do a lot of hiking and a lot of just exploring. And what's beautiful is that boys have the ability to shine in the different areas of our yeshiva. And therefore, kids who come from a variety of backgrounds have the ability, hopefully under the same ultimate goal and purpose, to get them closer to Yiddishkeit and closer to Hashem and to connect them to Israel. Sort of under one roof, we have the privilege of sort of having this melting pot of Jewish kids from across the world.
So you're going to be taking them after this to some Jeep touring today. I think that's great. Are you taking them shooting sometime? Shooting is key. I really believe that you have to take Jewish boys shooting, and girls.
Right. So there is a shooting range here in the Gush, and one of our trips, our guys did go and had that experience as well. So, I mean... Yeah, we try and give them the full experience here.
That's awesome. So they get to do some chesed, get to do good stuff, they get to be involved in Israeli society. And I just love the fact that this yeshiva, Ashreinu, is it ashreinu.org, I think?
It's ashreinu.org.il. That's where our and that's our website.
Ashreinu.org.il. Ashreinu is S-A-S-H.
R-E-I-N-U.
All right, R-E-I-N-U, Ashreinu.org.il. Rabbi Gottschuden, thank you so much. And thank you so much for like giving these kids a shot. Of course, the test is going to be also where they're going next year, you know, secular American colleges and other places. That challenge is to hold them in the fold is not easy.
No question. So we definitely pride ourselves that, you know, and we invest so much time and effort into their year. And I'm proud to say every year we have like 3 or 4 boys that actually stay on in Israel and then go to the army. Baruch Hashem. So we probably have over 20 boys over the last 6 years that have served this country. I will tell you, Yishai, we have our first alumni, actually, who came from Muncie, went to MTA for high school. I went to high school, but then after his year went home for a year to Muncie, came back to Yerushalayim, did the army, was in Kfir, 2 years later, after the Army, met a girl from Muncie in Yerushalayim. They got married. They live now in Ofra. We have our first alumni who was built there by Bayit Ne'amah Yisrael, and I was Zocha as my first time to, I know my father married you, Yishai. So my first Masader Kedushin opportunity just happened a year and a half ago when this young man and young woman beautifully got married. And just to tell you, they just had their first baby, which is our first Ashrenu, next generation. The first baby of the yeshiva was born literally 2 weeks ago. I was there at the naming of this beautiful, beautiful girl. So there's a lot of nachat. And yes, you're 100% right. We definitely try our best in every way to be in touch with our boys through all different video conferencing and different classes, and our Rabbeim divide up and to speak to them, because yes, we're preparing them to go back to college campuses, to university and life, and to hopefully, you know, use this year of inspiration to help them carry through, please God, for many, many years in the rest of their life to be a very, very productive and lead a beautiful, vibrant Jewish life.
Rabbi Gottschuden, ashrenu.org.il. Thank you so much for being with us here in Hebron.
Yishai, it's an honor. Thank you for sharing everything you do with our boys.
All right, folks, you're back here with me on the Yishai Fleischer Show, broadcasting on the Land of Israel Network. And we've had a great show so far. We've had Rabbi Przanski from Teaneck. We've had Rabbi Fass from Nefesh B'Nefesh. And we've had Rabbi Gottschuden talking about his yeshiva Ashrenu. That was in Hebron. So we had Teaneck, New York, Hebron. Now I'm back in Judea in my own house here in our living room. And I'm with my beloved hostess with the mostest, Malka Fleischer. Malka, shalom.
Shalom.
And welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
And welcome back after
Thank you.
Like 1 billion trips to America.
Yeah, I had 2 trips in a row to America, and it was darned tiring, but also awesome. And I really feel, sometimes I wonder to myself, like, why am I flying to America for? Like, why do I do this for? And it comes back to me that the connection between American Jewry, North American Jewry, and diaspora Jewry and Israel is key right now. And we have to kind of stay on the same page so that nobody kind of falls behind, and that we stay connected, and that we keep building the promised land together, and that we keep building each other spiritually and educationally together. And I like to call this project, I call it Holding Hands Across the Atlantic. And I'm actually very excited that my next that's exactly the point, it's not transatlantic, the next trip is trans-Pacific. I'm going to be heading out to Australia in May. I'm very excited.
Crikey, Shy.
Crikey. I'm excited. I can't do Australian, Maka. I cannot do Australian.
Watch enough Crocodile Dundee. That's problem.
That's right. That's not Zionism. This is Zionism. Okay. So I'm really excited to head out in May, and I'm going to be in Australia for Yom Yerushalayim.
That's pretty cool.
I know. I'm doing like 2 events probably Sydney and maybe in Melbourne. I don't know.
Wow.
I'm going to be doing 2 events on Yom Yerushalayim. I'm going to be bringing Yom Yerushalayim to Down Under.
Wow.
I come from the land Down Under. I'm excited.
Can you hear the thunder?
Yeah. Actually, I got to tell you, Australia's an awesome place. It's an incredible, physically speaking, it's just an incredible, crazy trees, cockatoos walking around, flying around. It's nuts. It's a beautiful place. I'm very excited. Okay. So I promised you, Malka, that I'm going to tell you some of my stories.
Yes, you've been home now for a couple of days, and you've been withholding from me stories so that we could talk about it on the show.
Okay, so here's one story that I wanted to tell you. I was supposed to leave Wednesday afternoon from Washington to New York to do an event for the RJC, for the Republican Jewish Committee. I was supposed to do like a wine tasting and talk about being a settler.
Yeah.
Okay? But what happened was, is that there was a snow.
A big snow.
A biggish snow.
A blizzard.
It wasn't a blizzard. It was like 8 inches of snow. It was what we in New York call snow.
Well, they made a very big deal out of it. They closed the schools in New York.
Yeah. There was a big snow. Any case, so Andy, or my good friend Andy Wells, said to me, don't take the train up to New York. Don't do it. And also the RJC event was canceled, so I had an extra day.
Bummer.
And that day is the day that I went to the Museum of the Bible. I mm-hmm. wanted to see the Museum of the Bible in the National Mall in Washington, D.C. for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Some people told me it was
a little controversial.
Right. Some people said to me it was very Christian-y. Other people told me it's not. And some people said to me, I didn't know for myself. And I've had many experiences in life that other people's prejudging, I have learned that I do not trust it. meaning to say, it's not that I don't trust their opinion, but I don't trust it for me. Like, I don't know if I'm going to have that same opinion. By the way, on this trip, I just want to say, again and again, it reaffirmed my own belief that our biases against people.
Biases?
Biases are wrong. Do not trust your bias, okay? Do not trust your bias. People try to imbue me with a bias against the Museum of the Bible. I was actually toured by a congressman's wife who's involved in that museum. They separate out the quote-unquote Old Testament from New Testament very well, and they kind of let you know.
So you
know,
can go to your little section.
You can go to your section, or you could go to the other section if you're interested in understanding how other people know, you know, what other people believe and how they think. But they do things very well. There's a lot of, here's another Hebrew word, shituf pe'ulah.
Ooh, that's two words.
That's two words, shituf pe'ulah.
Shituf pe'ulah.
Shituf pe'ulah, how would you say that in English, Malka?
Cooperation.
Cooperation with.
Working together.
Yeah, cooperation, shituf pe'ulah, right. Working together. With
Shituf means together. Pula means
action.
Doing a work.
Yeah. Right. So there's a lot of shituf pula with Israeli institutions, including this beautiful thing about archaeology about King David. Very fascinating. I had not seen that here in Israel. I enjoyed it very much. There was a movie called Drive Through History or something. It was awesome.
Wow.
It was
awesome. I would like to see that.
I cried two or three times.
You cried two or three times?
I cried two or three times. Two times because something moved me, and once because I thought to myself, why the heck don't we
do we have such a problem with this?
Why don't we have a museum of the Bible? Israel. If they have six stories, we should have 10 stories in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, the
Holy
City.
One day, Bezrat Hashem.
So, but it was quite moving. It was also, look, why did I cry? Because I was just like, first thing, they had these images of the Judean desert and all that. And I'm just like, I love this place so much. And you're in D.C.
Right,
and
so
you're tired,
far away from home.
And you're far, far away from home. You know, you look at the big screen and you see this love of the Judean desert, of finding the Dead Sea Scrolls at Qumran. Any case, my conclusion about the Museum of the Bible, thumbs up. Hmm. One thumbs down, though, the store. The store
what?
Is like, the store.
I can't go to places where the store is thumbs down.
Well, no, the store is thumbs up. If you were a Gentile or a Christian, the store is thumbs up.
So it's very heavily Christian
themed. Right,
the
store doesn't have enough like
Jewish cool stuff.
Right, so the museum is definitely worth it. Anyway, this is not even the store yet.
Okay.
But that was an important segue.
Pre-story.
I want people to know, if you're in D.C., check out the Bible Museum. Museum of the Bible. There's definitely value there. And they don't, yes, it is a place that is created by Christians, but they really don't put it in your face. They really separate it very nicely. And it's really about the Bible. For example, a whole floor is dedicated to how the Bible has influenced America.
Hmm.
So it's not so much about the Bible, the stuff inside, but almost how the Bible has influenced
That's
people.
That's interesting. It's the Bible and America, basically, relationship.
How it helped people get out of slavery. They have old recordings of Bible songs.
Wow.
You know, they have all these, you know, Moses, you know, when Moses down in Egypt's land, let my people go. You know, so
yeah.
And they have all that stuff, and you just learn about how the Bible influences.
That sounds cool.
It's beautiful. It's a well done museum, and it's got a lot of Jewishness, certainly. And it's clear that there's a lot of love for the Jewish Bible, for Jerusalem, and for the Jewish people, and for Israel.
That's nice.
It's clear that they have a heart, as we say in Christianese.
Right.
A heart.
Well, Ishai, I just read in the news that there was a new Gallup poll taken in America, and the support for Israel is at a high, like a 20-year high, something like that.
Right. You could feel it in America. Anyway, this is all not even part of my story. But it was an interesting thing, the Bible Museum, and I do recommend it. Of course, folks, keep yourself aware of the fact that, yes, there is like...
Right,
like,
if you're not involved in Christian
right, if you're sensitive
belief,
to that,
so there may be some parts that are not for you.
Right, or it may be offensive to you or whatever it is. Like, be aware of the fact that this is a place...
Right, it's a Christian museum.
It's a Christian museum, but there are definitely sections that are not Christian. It depends on where you are in life. In my station in life, I'm able to go in and enjoy what I want to enjoy. And I also don't mind learning about other people and understanding where their minds are at. I learned a lot about Christianity, which was interesting to me, so I can understand my friends and colleagues better.
Right.
And that's also valuable. But, of course, it's a separate feeling for me than going to places that give me to strengthen my faith and my understanding. The section that they have on the Torah, by the way, is just Torah. No mixtures. Very beautiful. Anyway, here comes the real story,
okay.
My beloved Malka. Here comes the real story. So I'm taking a cab. Now, you know that cabs in Washington are not like cabs in New York. Cabs in New York get you there fast. You know, it's usually like Indian folks or Sikhs or whatever it is. But like, it's not so conversational anymore. There's like this barrier. It's not as conversational. It's faster. And usually New Yorkers are on their phone trying to get somewhere. In D.C., it's slower. There's a lot of times there's Africans, Ethiopians, Eritreans who are driving. They drive slower, listen to NPR, right? And it's just a different pace. And anybody who knows Washington knows exactly what I'm talking about. I came into the car. I heard the guy talking in Arabic. So immediately my bias was, okay, here's an Arab. And it turned out that he is a Somali. But here's the bias, the part that the bias really was like totally wrong about. Turns out that he was a very verbal, very intellectual person who was quite familiar with Washington, D.C. history. Right? So you have a Somali guy speaking in Arabic on the phone 1 minute ago, you know, laughing out loud, inshallah, inshallah, something like that, you know, and your bias wants to say, you know, I should call the Homeland Security. But immediately, it turns out exactly the opposite. And anyway, but that's still not the story.
All right.
Here's the story. We're driving, and I suddenly see what looks like a humongous castle.
Okay.
And the castle says, suddenly, Trump International Hotel.
Oh. Ooh, that's where you should stay next time you go to Washington.
I say to my Somali cab driver, who is telling me already about buildings in Washington, I say to him, what is this? He's like, this is the old post office. And Donald Trump put in $150 million into this thing. And now it's the swankiest hotel in D.C.
Ooh, go there for drinks and with congressmen next time.
And he says to me that the Chinese delegations all stay here. They stay at Trump International. They have a $200 breakfast. And then they go meet with Donald Trump
at the White House.
And here was my moment of like something dawned on me.
Okay.
Which is like, let me get this straight. The Chinese delegation comes, stays at this castle-like Trump International Hotel. Then they go to the White House, led by Donald Trump, and negotiate a trade agreement. Meaning to say, there's something going on here that is bigger than the information that I'm getting in the media.
What do you mean?
Well, nobody told me that he also owns the most important hotel in D.C.
Well,
now.
What do you think that means, though?
Well, it makes him
like the king. He's a kind of king,
a kind of czar, a kind of
emperor. Emperor Trump.
I think emperor is maybe not the right word, but maybe more like a sultan. You know, it's like a kind of sultan. It's like, here, you can stay at my castle. And then, like, you know, and it's like whatever they tell you in the news, there's something. There's a confluence of government and power and money here.
Right.
Which is bigger than my little understandings. And it was just like an aha moment. And it's a newish hotel. I mean, it's like this was happened recently, relatively recently.
That's interesting.
And I'm like, oh, so they first go to his hotel, then they go meet with him. First he wines and dines him at his multi-million dollar hotel, and then they meet him at the White House.
Wow.
And I don't have any more. It's not coming down to a bigger, here's maskana.
Yes, conclusion.
Other than just understand that there's a bigger game involved here. And I thought to myself, there's a Putin in this world. There's a Trump. There's an Erdogan. You know, there's these like mega.
What, Erdogan and Putin and Trump are all on the same level?
No, not a peoplehood. But anyway, it was like a wow moment. That's all I'm trying to say to you. It was just like a.
You should go there for drinks, though. You got to go to that hotel.
I would like to go there for drinks. I would like to go there.
You should go there. Meet a
the Somali,
like a congressperson.
The Somali cab driver from Homeland said to me that like all the top people come and stay
here.
He's like, it's full all the time.
I bet it's beautiful in there.
It looked amazing from the outside.
You have not taken me to one single Trump-managed thing.
Well,
I want to go to a Trump hotel.
It's funny you say that. Because
does he have casinos? We don't gamble.
Yeah, of
but I'll get a Diet Coke.
What, he's
in the
got
casino.
Casinos. He's Mr. Casino.
I want to do something Trump.
I was just in Vegas. There's things called Trump there. It's crazy. It's craziness. I love when people call him dumb, by the way. I'm just like,
well, who would call him dumb?
I mean, you can call him
He's unorthodox. He's crude, perhaps, but he's far from dumb.
Yeah. Okay.
He's brilliant, and if he's dumb, I hope that I'll be that dumb.
Speaking of Trump, it's time to clean up for Pesach, isn't it? See the what connection?
Is that? No.
Well, he's got a lot of properties.
Oh, make my kitchen great again?
Yeah. And we got to clean up our property here. We got to get ready for Pesach, sweetie.
Yeah, Pesach.
I've been in Vegas.
Yep.
And I've been in D.C. and I've been in New York and I've been in Tina.
Now you're going to be head deep into my oven. Spraying it and cleaning it. Yeah, it's time.
By the way, speaking of a Trump event, there is a big event coming.
What?
And that is...
Yishai, I want us to get invited to when the embassy goes up in May. Yishai, you better start working on that.
Pronto.
Speaking of Trump, I just want to say one more Trump thing, which is that Ivanka was back in the news, and we've all missed her on the news. I have missed her on the news because she's all of our favorite Jewish girl right now. And she was in the news because she was interviewed by the Washington Post, I think it was. And one thing I love about good reporters is that they are sneaky and they look around. So they looked around and they saw in her office at the White House that she has a few interesting things up on the wall. One thing she has up is pictures of her kids. That makes sense. Another thing that she has up on the wall is the handwritten lyrics to the awesome rock band Journey's song, Don't Stop Believing. Don't stop believing. Come on, Isha.
Don't stop believing.
Anyway, we could use the handwritten lyrics also, but she has them apparently written by the people who wrote the song.
Yes, that's the handwriting.
Because she is Ivanka Trump.
Right.
And but then what she has up also taped up there is a typed copy of her father's speech that he gave on television recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Wow.
And on it, it says something like, "To Ivanka, love, Dad." Signed by the President of the United States, the owner of the former post office turned Trump Hotel.
International.
Owner of casinos, apprentice star, Donald Trump.
Yeah. By the way, I want to say something.
And those are the things that she values.
That's right. And I want to say something about that right now.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
I just thought that
was
so
wondering
cool.
Why my mouth was talking about Donald Trump. And now I want to say something. I want to say something important, which is, first thing, there was more news about Donald Trump today is that he fired... T-Rex, Rex Tillerson.
Yeah.
I'm the only one who came up with T-Rex. And
that
nobody
is good.
Else,
too bad. Nobody, too bad for everybody
not,
else.
It
they
didn't
missed
catch
it.
On. T-Rex, Rex Tillerson. He's gone. Instead, he's being replaced by...
Before you say
by it. former director of the CIA, Pompeo.
Mike Pompeo, yeah. Who used to be a congressman. And I let my fingers do the walk and I went to Google and I typed in Mike Pompeo, Congressman Israel.
Yes.
Send.
Yes.
And I found a very nice picture of him near above the Kotel in Jerusalem. So he's one of ours.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's
a friend. Okay. Maybe. I mean, just because he shows up in Jerusalem doesn't mean that he's
right. No, but supposedly
a friend. But it seems to be that he could very well jive with the whole Ivanka having the speech about Jerusalem up on the wall policy that's going on there
okay.
in the White House.
And
today.
Here's what I want to say about all that. That's all fine and dandy and great, and we're all happy. Move to Jerusalem, ecstatic.
Yishai, I want to go to that embassy opening.
We want to go to the embassy opening.
How are we going to make that happen?
Rega, I'm trying to get to a point, okay?
Okay.
And we're all, we're all very happy about the defunding of
UNESCO.
UNRWA and leaving of UNESCO and all the stuff. It's great stuff is happening. But if anybody thinks that when they come out with this so-called peace proposal or deal, which is going to invariably not be good for the Jews, okay? Because giving any land...
You can't compromise on what's important to you.
Exactly. Because there's nobody to compromise with and nothing to compromise on.
Uh-oh. Do you think Trump is going to do a 180?
No, but I think that...
When we totally reject that thing?
That's exactly what he's got to know. He's got to know, we will be your friends when you do the right thing. When you do the wrong thing, if, God forbid, and I'm holding out that maybe it won't happen... Because there's a lot of good people in that staff that don't believe in this. But if there's, God forbid, a bad effort to push a peace deal that's bad, well, it's going to be yet another failure, and you will hear it from us. Meaning to say,
what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen when that happens? We're in a funky time.
Because I have learned that there's nothing to guess at these days.
You're not going to win anything. What do you think? I'm asking you. What do you think?
I think that there's always a Yetzer Hara, a bad inclination to try to come up with another peace deal. I think the best thing to do is to just not. I think if I could give advice right now to the Trump administration is do not go into the mire and the muck of trying to come up with a deal.
But it's happening, though. It's happening.
That's a mistake.
That's happening.
Big mistake. And it's going to be inevitably it's going to fail. Better not. The best deal that you could do right now is to stay on the sidelines and wait for the Palestinian Authority to fall apart. That's the best thing to do. What will happen? Here's what's going to happen. What will happen is that a peace deal will be offered. It will be rejected by their side, certainly, and then by our side, partially, by people like myself and people of in the nationalist camp. And then at the end, it will just die.
Right, fizzle out.
And that would be too bad because I want to see this administration, together with Prime Minister Netanyahu, continue to do great things. So I don't want them to fail at something, but they have to know that if they mess with us, if they start to tell us to give away land to Palestinian Authority, and by the way, the Palestinian Authority is going to reject it.
Actually count on them more than I count on our own politicians to make sure that this deal doesn't go through.
But chaval, and here's another Hebrew
word.
That's
a lot of words for today.
Yeah, chaval, too bad.
That's an important one.
Yeah,
that's an important one. It's used ubiquitously.
Yeah, chaval.
Too bad.
Too bad.
It's a waste.
It's a shame. Chaval. It's just a shame. Malka, see, we keep on not talking about getting ready for Pesach, though. That's the thing. We got to get up. When we finish the show, when I hit the stop button on record here.
You're going in the oven.
I'm not going in the oven, Malka. Plus, this year, we said we're not cleaning the oven anymore.
We have to clean.
I'll do the minimal cleaning.
I decided we're not using our oven
over.
For Pesach anymore.
Yeah, it's over.
Also, thank God, it looks like we're going to be
At the Neve Ilan,
a wonderful hotel,
right?
Which is such a nice place, a nice Mahadran hotel for the holidays, and we are going to swim.
And we're
going to
be there.
We're going to have a beautiful Seder. That's the real main thing.
Honey, let me just clarify though for our beloved listeners. We're talking about that I do the.
Are the scholar in residence, the rabbi on premises,
right? For the Eddie's Travel Group. Throughout all of Pesach at Neve Ilan. If you haven't booked your ticket and your stay at Neve Ilan, don't worry about it because it's over.
Yeah, it's completely
totally
full. We couldn't even get your own mother
into
the hotel. It was that packed out
this
year.
Right. That's right.
But I do want to say for people.
Do you have an Afikoman ready?
Oh, the Afikoman present?
Do you have the Afikoman
present? So I don't know if this is something that like real quote-unquote Israelis do. But me being from America, we have this little tradition. It's called, I don't know why this is at all educational. It doesn't seem so educational. Basically, the kids take the last piece of matzah that you're supposed to eat. It's called the afikoman. They call it dessert, which is a cruel name because there's nothing dessert-like about it.
It's the fico man. It's the final awesome dessert.
Right. It's not dessert. It's the last piece of matzah that you're supposed to eat. And I like matzah, okay? I'm not disparaging matzah. But the kids are supposed to steal it when the father is not looking, hide it somewhere, but they have to tell me where so we're not stuck until 4 o'clock in the morning trying to find this thing so we can eat it. And then they bargain with the father until they get something, a nice prize of some kind. And it happens to be that also during Passover, during the Seder, I give out smaller prizes all throughout the course of the Seder in the hopes of keeping the children up and active and engaged in the Seder all night long. So I give out candies. I give out little prizes. It gets harder as the kids get older. Used to be that they're like, a sticker! Now a sticker is not going to do it. Anyway, but we have to figure out what the big, big prize is. The like, you know, the Afikoman present.
Right, the Afikoman present.
And we've been talking about the Afikoman present. And we have many wonderful things that we could give the kids. Like I just got them. You brought with you back a giant thing of Legos and Magna Tiles. Those are all very good toys. But I have this feeling that the kids are not going to be like so excited about those things because they have some Magna Tiles. And they have some Legos, and then to get more Legos and more Magna Tiles, that's anticlimactic.
Well, why did I haul all that stuff from America for you if you don't have a Afikoman ready?
What do you mean?
I
don't get it.
I mean to say, like, I just came back from the land of a Fico man. Although Israel's today also
I don't
land
know what
of
to
Fico
do.
Man.
Yeah, we have stuff here also. I'm not so worried about it. Every year, the last few years, I've been buying. I mean, look, what are we even talking about? We're talking about the fact that sometimes I send a few items to you to bring back from America because America has better prices than Israel on certain items. But a lot of times you can get the things here in Israel. They won't be so much more expensive. They're certainly easier.
Thank God. It's gotten much better.
Yeah, it's much easier. And it's fun. It's fun anyway to do the online shopping on Amazon, you know.
Okay.
But we have to figure out the Afikoman present. And we're having a major internal debate, me and you, Yishai, because we're trying to decide if we should give the ultimate Afikoman present. And the truth is, I don't think either of us really want to. But I'm not sure if we can avoid it much longer.
Which is what?
Which is a dog.
Which is a little dog?
Which is a little live actual dog.
I love dogs.
The problem is and that we out, don't have
oh,
a backyard.
I hung out with a doodle, with a golden doodle.
I love
doodle.
Doodles. All the oodles are good. All the poodle mixes are good.
I hung out with a doodle.
A labradoodle?
It was
retriever oodle.
It's called a golden doodle, I think.
Oh, gold doodle. Yeah, yeah, it's a golden retriever poodle.
It was really good.
Yeah,
it's a great
dog.
The
oodles are all good.
Loves to play. So nice. Hypoallergenic.
Yes,
the whole thing.
Yes, that's the thing. I have a sense that our children have allergic tendencies because you and I have allergic tendencies, and I don't. If we're gonna have a dog, then it can't be an allergic type of dog, and I don't want dog hair everywhere.
Okay, folks. So
I don't know what to do. People, what do we do?
That's right. Write me an email.
Should we do it? I'm scared. That's a big responsibility. It's basically like giving birth. We're just going to have another baby, except this baby can't come with us everywhere.
Yeah, this golden doodle, like I woke up in the morning. I'm like, hey, everybody, the family that I was staying with. I'm like, hey, how you guys doing? They're like, great. I'm like, you guys sleep okay? They're like, well, the golden doodle woke up and was throwing up at 5 a.m. and this and that. Then it climbed the bed with us. And I'm like, golden doodle, you are not all you're cracked out to be. You're a big.
Yeah, it's a project. So I don't know. Right. I don't know what to do. I'm torn about it.
Tov Malka, I gotta close off the show. We've had a big show today. We had Rabbi Przanski. We've had Rabbi Yeshua Fast from Nefesh B'Nefesh. We had Gotch Yudin from Ashreinu.
You had like Rabbi All-Stars.
Yeah, I'm thinking about calling this show Three Rabbis and a Wife. I'm thinking about calling it Three Rabbis and a Wife.
Okay.
Yeah, is that a good
people
name?
People might click on that.
See, Three Rabbis and a Wife. That'll get people interested. In any case, I love to be with you guys, and it's great to have this transnational show. But really, no matter where we are and wherever we walk to the land of Israel. We're connected to the land of Israel. And we're really broadcasting from the land of Israel, even when we're in other places. And that's what the show was about, by the way, is that even when we were in other places, it was always about folks looking towards the land of Israel and towards building the land of Israel. And
Welcome home, Yishai. Welcome home to the land of Israel.
Thank you so much, Malka. And I'm really looking forward to cleaning that oven.
Yes, me too.
I also want to recommend very quickly to folks to check out our sponsors of the show. And right now at jbrick.com, which is our Jewish Lego folks, they have an amazing Seder plate made out of Lego.
Yes.
That's a great Afikoman present.
There's a lot of good Afikoman presents there. They have some very large sets of all kinds of cool Jewish stuff that you can buy. It looks really neat.
Okay, so that's jbrick.com. We have our good friends at janglo.net. That's the information superhighway for what's happening
in Israel.
I recommend
people sign up for that ASAP if they're coming to Israel for Pesach, because I'm sure that Janglo is going to be loaded with all kinds
of
information.
That's a great
all
point.
In English.
That's right. So if you're coming just for Pesach, go to janglo.net.
Yeah, sign up for that.
Sign up, or I get it on RSS.
Yeah, go to the website.
Go to the website. It's very good. Let's also thank our good friends at HebronFund.org. And if you are coming for Pesach, don't forget to take a day or two, especially on Monday of Chol HaMoed of the intermediary days, to come to Hebron. It's going to be a huge music festival.
Oh, it's so nice. Full of nice people. And the people of Hebron, they try really, really hard. They make it very nice. They bring in all kinds of cool stuff. They're very children friendly, bring in lots of stuff for them.
Right.
There's a great museum that you need to see.
Also, the Land of Israel Network. The Land of Israel Network is the home for this show and all the other great shows, including Gil and Josh Haston and Shlomo Katz and Eve Harrow, of course.
Yeah, and there's been so much going on in
Ari
the news.
And Jeremy, and there's been so much going on
in the news. You'll definitely want to, tune into that.
Yes, so that is another friend. And of course, Tchelet, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T, Tchelet.com. That's the blue string.
I think this year, Yishai, that's going to be one of our trips. I really want to sign up for a tour of the Tchelet factory.
Right, and please remember our newest sponsor, which is northisrael.com. Go to northisrael.com/Yishai, and you will be treated to an amazing shawarma meal in northern Israel. They'll get you out there. They'll show you the most incredible lands where really the heroes of the Mishnah and the Talmud are buried, and the mystics and all that, and the art and the air and the clouds and the Sea of Galilee. It's the best place.
I know that a lot of people, when they come for Pesach.
Northisrael.com/Yishai.
Northisrael.com/Yishai. I know that a lot of people, when they come to Israel for Pesach, they start, their eyes get very big.
Yes.
You know, and they start to think to themselves, like, boy, I would love to root myself a little bit more here in Israel. And some people think about making Aliyah, and other people think to themselves, like, well, you know, maybe I'm going to make Aliyah later, or maybe I'm not going to make Aliyah. I don't really know, but I would love to invest in a property.
Right.
I would love to own. And the truth is that, thank God, here in the Jerusalem area and Judea, and like, you know, just to the north and south of Jerusalem, and certainly in the Tel Aviv area and all around quote unquote regular Israel, prices of property are going up. And there's not a lot of places left where you can buy a property at a really affordable price.
Right.
And northern Israel is still one of those places where the property values have not gone up yet so high. So if you're thinking to yourself about maybe making that dream come true of buying a property in Israel, northisrael.com/Yishai. And you can start making that dream come true.
Right. Finally, last plug, and that is the plug to just stay connected. If you want to stay connected with me, just write me an email, yishai@thelandofisrael.com. Send me a picture of yourself, of your family, of your friends, of your dog, of your flag.
And what are you sending your kids for Afikoman presents?
That's right. Tell me what you're sending for Afikoman presents. I want hashtag Afikoman something. You know, let me know what you're doing.
My Afikoman.
My Afikoman. All right, my Afikoman. You could take a picture with the hashtag My Afiko Man, and
you're gonna confuse people with this Afiko Man.
Afiko Man is just
like
my,
you're trying to confuse people with your what was the word you used? Biases.
I like Afiko Man because it's like my Pesach superhero. He lands at the end of Pesach of the Seder. He comes and gives you presents. Afiko Man. It's like a Santa type character. El Havdil. Anyway. Okay, folks, listen, Malka, there's a lot of radio here. There's a lot of show.
Yes, okay.
I want to let the people go.
Let them go.
I want to bless them. I also want them to connect to me also on social media. I've been trying really hard to keep it really pumping and to show you what's going on here in Israel. So you could join me on Instagram, Yishai Fleischer, Twitter, Yishai Fleischer, Facebook, Yishai Fleischer. Show's called Yishai Fleischer. Can't miss it. I tell people all the time, I'm like, they're like, how do I reach you? I'm like, if you can't find me on the internet, there is something wrong with you, okay? It's like there's no way.
Sometimes the spelling is off-putting.
That is what you're saying.
Yishai,
what you just said.
A friend of mine who I've been friends with for 20 years just wrote me a letter misspelling my name.
That is what you just said right now is a non-truth. You do not have to know.
No, she did misspell my name.
You do not have to know how to spell my name, okay?
Well,
Google will spell
it for
you. You do it phonetically. Spell it E-E. C H A A A I Y U E.
I don't know if that will actually happen.
Okay, Fleischer, stick in a C, F L Y C S H E R. I don't know what you want to write. Okay, and it'll be like, I think I know what you mean. Do you mean this, dummy? Okay, and that's the beauty of Google. Any case, folks, stay tuned, stay connected, stay strong, stay part of the story. Keep broadcasting the story of Israel. Keep finding a way to connect. Find any way to connect. Are you drinking that wine from the land of Israel? Are you planning a trip for Pesach? Are you sending your kids for the summer? Are you putting up a flag? What are you doing for Israel's 70th birthday? There's so many ways to connect, to keep making Aliyah, to take that step, to be just a little bit more connected. 5% more connected, and your enemies will think you're 100% more connected, and Israel will be that much stronger. So that's all I'm asking of you folks. Make that connection. That's what the word Chevron's about, Chibur, connection. And just make it a little bit stronger, and our whole world will look different. So God bless you. Stay strong. Malka, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. God bless you, Malka.
You too, Yishai.
God bless all of Am Yisrael, the Jewish women, and all the friends of Israel. God bless you wherever you are. Stay strong, stay connected, stay tuned, and shalom.